It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And welcome back. It's great to have all of you here. What a crazy first hour. You expected it. Calm, then crazy. Andre begins hour number two. Good afternoon, Andre.
Coach, how you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for calling.
Well, that was a rough one, that last call. But listen, I live in Atlanta, but I'm an LSU fan. But I commend and congratulate Georgia on winning their first national championship since 1980. I was a freshman in high school when they won the last one. So I congratulate them. But I also have to congratulate Alabama. And, in order to be a great winner, you got to be a gracious loser. I felt like Nick Saban was a gracious loser. And, you know, Alabama's young, so they'll be back. Georgia will be back. This is a tough conference, the SEC is. And, you know, one thing that some people forget, Alabama is the yardstick that all other college football, they are the standard that all other college football is measured against. Do you agree or disagree, Coach Feinbaum?
Oh, sure. I mean, it changes throughout the years, but for 15 years, Alabama has been it.
They've been it, and hell, Coach Bryant was the same way when he was there.
This isn't the first time they were it. They were it for about 25 years between in the 60s and 70s.
Right. So, and, you know, they'll be back. You have to have talent to win, and there's no better place in this country for high school football talent than the Southeast. And it's growing because more people are moving in here, especially Metro Atlanta, Charlotte, you know, Huntsville, Alabama. That's where the jobs are, and that's where the weather is. And it just happens to be in the Southeast. So, you know, but congratulations to Georgia. I don't want to rain on their parade, but I'd be glad when LSU gets back up there. But, hey, thanks for taking my call, Coach.
Always good to hear from you, Andre. You take care of yourself. Tony is in Georgia. Hey, Tony.
Hey, what's going on, Paul?
Tony, we're doing great. Thank you.
I tell you, long-suffering Georgia fan, but I'm a happy man today, Paul. Happy man today.
Well, you should be.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Paul, I tell you what. The coverage from ESPN yesterday and leading up to that championship game was phenomenal. I just want to commend the folks at ESPN, the SEC. You know, the network, I was back and forth, and it was tremendous. You should have seen it. It really was great coverage. Excellent announcer. But you know who made the right prediction out of everybody? I mean, several people picked Georgia.
Who's that?
But you know who did the best? Dan Mullen.
You're right. He sure did. He was spot on, and he identified really where the issues were, and he was right.
Yeah, he was. He said it's going to be nick and tuck in that first, you know, trying to fill each other out, and it was. And then the second half, it was on. But I just wanted to end with this right here, Paul. I mean, everybody, you know, you got bandwagon that, you know, he gloats and all that other stuff. He probably never played the game in his life. Bandwagon, I call him bandwagon, y'all call him legend. But they need to realize Kirby Smart is 46 years old. Nick Saban was 52 when he won his first one. Kirby ain't going nowhere. Dogs ain't going nowhere. This ain't Georgia's last national championship in 40 years.
Well said. Thank you. Did you hear the line Kirby had after the game honoring Larry Munson? He said there's going to be some property destroyed in Indianapolis tonight. That was a tribute to the great Larry Munson. How about William in Georgia? Hey, William, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm a second-time caller, and I listen to your show, watch your show every day since I'm retired now. I just want to say y'all do a fantastic job. It's a great show.
Thank you very much.
When I called you last time, it was back when all the Georgia faithful wanted to get rid of Mark Richt, and our discussion then was about who they're going to replace him with. Well, I think after last night, that turned out pretty doggone good.
It did.
I was I attended the 1980 championship. I was a 20-year-old young man on leave from the Uncle Sam's Navy at the time, and it was one of the best three-day weekends I can remember ever having.
I bet.
I'm a little longer in the tooth now, and if not for my pacemaker, I'm not sure I would have made it through last night's game. But it was just as good.
I don't have heart problems, but I could have borrowed yours because it was a tough game to watch with the emotional swings of that second half. I mean, it really, from the kicker. I mean, you knew. Some games you kind of pay attention to. I mean, this game you knew every possession mattered.
That's exactly right, now, boy. I tell you, it had me from the edge of my seat to jumping up in the floor all night long. Like I say, I'm glad I had that pacemaker. I'm not sure I could have made it. But anyway, that's all I really wanted to say. And there's one other thing I was going to say that I knew you'd have a lot of Georgia callers, and it was the Alabama callers that I really was interested in today, especially your callers that call regularly, you know, about every week.
Yeah, we're one down, and thank you for the call very much. And I'm kind of personally trying to make predictions on every caller. Legend did not disappoint. He went exactly according to script. We'll see if some of the other ones will call, betting line as they won't, and if they do, what will they say? Glenn is in Kentucky. Hello, Glenn. Good afternoon.
Yes, Paul. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to see how Legend responded to last night, and now that I've seen it and heard it, I just wanted to suggest that you go to your program on November the 1st at 6:35 p.m. when you were talking to him, and he said, Legend said, quote unquote, the Braves and Georgia won't win. They are just alike because they are in the state of Georgia. So, sure enough, look what happened. They did win. They're from the state of Georgia, and they did win. So, I don't think we can really count on what Legend has to say too much. And also, I will throw in November the 15th, Joe from Red Bay said, quote unquote, and this was also at 6:35 that night. He said, Georgia won't score a touchdown on Alabama. So just wanted to share those two with you. And I certainly don't mean to gloat or anything like that. Certainly Alabama is the measuring stick, and they have a lot of gracious fans, a lot of good fans, and as does Georgia, but Georgia also has its share of braggarts as well, and people that aren't quite that help the reputation of the Georgia Bulldogs. But when you call in and gloat and brag and things like that, and you do that, and when you do that by taking down the other team, the other school, and their fans and their state, when you do that, you don't build your team up. You just bring yourself down. And so I just wanted to share that and see how things go.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. We are heading to a break. We'll have Mike Griffith in the third hour of the program. We've already had L. Duncan and John Talty. He was in Indianapolis last night. He'll give us his view right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Let's check out Jim in North Carolina. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Paul. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you.
I just, it hadn't been reported. I hadn't seen a whole lot about it, but when's the last time Alabama's been held to 30 yards rushing?
I mean, I know they've had one or two bad games, but that would be—I can't tell you.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, the only Alabama touchdown came from a recovered fumble at the Georgia 16.
True. Yeah, I mean, Alabama had one game this year. Was it LSU? Where they did very little offensive production. But, yeah, I mean, it was – if you're an Alabama fan, it was a painful game to watch because you never had much confidence because of – and on the other side, and part of the reason with the Georgia defenders, especially Kendricks, was just awesome in terms of getting in the way. And Georgia guys – the Georgia receivers just made so many – spectacular play, starting with Pickens' first count catch.
Well,
Chad is up next in the ATL. Hello, Chad.
Hey, Paul. This is Chad from the ATL. I'm sorry, I was watching your show.
That's okay.
But I remember a couple weeks ago you were interviewing Burger McFarland, and I know you probably know where I'm going with this and what
sure
Burger
do.
Said, and he said there was no way Stetson could win a national championship, you know. And I was just wondering if you had a chance to talk to him recently and ask him that, if he rethinks that question.
I have not had a chance to talk to him. I hope he's rethought it. And by the way, it became a big topic of conversation. And let me remind people, after Atlanta, Booger was not alone. Now, Booger said it leading into the Michigan game. He said it the day before on December 30th. That will definitely be a freezing cold take. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Meg, who is in Florida. Hello, Meg.
Hey, Paul. It's great to talk to you. I am
Thank
a Georgia
you.
Bulldog fan. I live in Pensacola, Florida, and we are in Lower Alabama here on the Panhandle. I'm surrounded by Bama fans, but I called because I was a senior at the University of Georgia back in 1980 when we won the national championship. My birthday is this week. I'm going to be 64.
Oh, my goodness.
So the best birthday present in the world is to win the national championship. And now I get to talk to Paul Feinbaum. How about that?
Well,
so that's very exciting.
We're in the same age group in terms of – so I remember that Georgia win. And, you know, I remember it wasn't the next year when they lost to Pittsburgh, but I'll never forget watching the Penn State game 2 years ago. Todd Blackledge was a quarterback, and all Georgia had to do was win that, and they were the national champion again, and they lost in bone-crushing defeat, heartbreak. And, you know, so, I mean, Vince Dooley really had it going, and then Georgia went into the desert for about 30 or 40 years.
Yes, I think 30 years to be exact. But yeah. I wanted to tell you, too, that it's just been so exciting to watch and to be a part of it. And I got to tell you, watching that game last night and seeing them take that 6 points away from us in the first quarter, my first thought was, oh, Lord, here we go again. And turning around and giving Bama the ball back again in the same play in the fourth quarter, I said, oh, I started to cry. I said, this is it. There's just no way we're ever in hell going to beat this team. It's over. I thought I had doomsday dog thoughts. And we turned it around, and it happened, and I stood there in my living room, and I said, oh, my God, we're actually going to win this thing. And then we had a pick six, which was so sweet after that horrible. I was at the Atlanta game with 2:26, saw that ball go into the end zone, and then we lost. It was like a dagger in my heart. So to see him, Ringo, run that pick six back into the end zone, I got to tell you, as a Georgia fan, I'm going to start crying right now. I'm so happy. I can't believe it, Paul. I just can't believe it.
Well, Meg, you should be happy. It's one of these indelible moments that we will always remember. Thank you very much for the call. Larry is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Larry.
Paul Feinbaum, so good to talk with you. I've talked with you in the past, and I just wonder how many of your listeners and viewers are as fortunate as I am to know about the Bulldog success and to have seen it and heard it since 1939. I'm 89 years old. I listened to Georgia beat UCLA 9-0 in the Rose Bowl when my brother was at the University of Georgia, and I was just a kid. And then I had the pleasure of seeing them win in the 880 with Herschel. And Lord, last night, to see that when Ringo intercepted that pass, I screamed so loud here in South Carolina. I woke up my dog and probably some neighbors around here. Because I've been following the Bulldogs since 1939. I doubt there are too many of your viewers and listeners, unless maybe Vince Dooley, who I saw last night, and I was so happy to see him there at 89 years ago.
Yeah, that was really special. That was great.
I was just so happy to see the Dogs win one more championship when I'm still 6 feet above ground. And just wanted to tell you, one comment on something that's disturbed me all season. Stetson Bennett, an awful lot of Georgia fans have told me we can't win a championship with Stetson Bennett. We just can't. I simply want, and I was a Bennett follower, and all I can say to those folks, please trust Kirby and his staff. They certainly have to know who the best quarterback is on Georgia's team. And who has the best chance to get Georgia to the championship? And Kirby and his quarterback, who was frowned on by so many of our avid fans, ought to just take a back seat now and be thankful we have Kirby. we have Kirby Smart to coach the Bulldogs. And let him make those decisions about the team. I couldn't be happier for the Bulldogs. Go, Dogs.
Thank you very, very much. We continue with Daryl in Georgia. Hello, Daryl.
Well. You know what? The guy just nailed it. Let me just add to what he said, to what he was talking about, okay? They booed him in the second game of the season when we played UAB. His own fans in his own stadium booed him, okay? That's when I became a bigger Stetson Bennett fan. Legend bumping his guns on my Stetson Bennett gave me leave Georgia to the national championship, beat Alabama. Well, what now? What, Paul? What are the Florida and the Tennessee and the Auburn fans going to do now, Paul? They can't complain. They can't throw 1980 up anymore. They have nothing else. That was the last part of their arsenal. I mean, they have nothing else they can sling our way. You know what? I mean, this is better than 1980. I was there in 1980. I remember it. But this is much, much, much more sweeter. I mean, just what a dominant performance by that defense. Absolutely dominant. Beating Alabama, the blueprint for beating Alabama wasn't hard, Paul. Everybody knew what it was. You got to stop Bryce Young. You got to pressure him. You got to put him on his butt. okay? Because if you don't, you just let him sit down in the pocket, he'll pick your secondary apart. That was the blueprint for beating Alabama. And I think if Kirby come out and told the truth, really, we would have beat Alabama the first time, okay? But we didn't because Texas A&M had to mess it all up. Alabama had to go and lose to Texas A&M. Had they beat Texas, Kirby left it up to the players. He said, you want to beat them now for the SEC title or you want to beat them for the national championship? Because now we can't beat them both times. So which one do you want? They chose the national championship. That's the way it went down. I mean, that's why that defense, played like that in the first game against Alabama. Everybody knew how great that defense was. We laid down for them because we wanted them in the national championship game. That's where we wanted to beat them at, okay? And you know what? We beat them and we beat the refs. Finally, that's the hard part about beating Alabama. You got to beat them sorry refs, too. That Stetson Bennett, that was a pass. That was no fumble. But you know what? Not this time, brother. Not this time. There is a new king of college football, and it resides in Athens, Georgia. And this is just the starting point, Paul. This is just Kirby Smart 6 years. That's the two national titles. Finally won it. Beat old Nick. Shut down Alabama. And I'll tell you what, I'll give the Bama fans some credit. They have been they've been nice so far. They congratulate me. They ain't been, all crazy like a lot of fans. But this is just a great day. It's a great day to be a Georgia Bulldog. What do you think about the game, Paul? What impressed you the most?
Well, I was, to say I'm impressed by the Georgia defense is an understatement. I thought the Georgia secondary was deadly as well. And, they were, you can talk about Jameson and Metchie not being there, but they were not giving up anything. And they really did have Bryce Young rattled. And, he was composed at times, but there was literally nothing he could do. By the way, excluding last year, and last year's championship game has somewhat been written off because of COVID, the ratings for last year were bad. The lowest ever at 18.7 million. But if you exclude last year, the Georgia-Alabama game was still seen by fewer people than any of the CFP title games, as well as it's the second lowest since 2005. That is not an indication of the game. The game went down to the end. I mean, the game was in doubt. Nearly at midnight. The problem is the Monday night. 22.6 million people saw the game over three ESPN networks. It, again, second lowest since the CFP started in 2015, other than last year. The first game, I believe, drew about 35 million people, so the audience, not half of that, but it's still dramatically down, and it's all because of the convoluted system that the CFP has, the way they structure it. But we all saw yesterday, and we heard from the commissioner of the SEC, nothing is going to change. John Talty will talk about that and the game. More of your reaction after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, we welcome all of you back. What an afternoon this has been after Monday night in Indianapolis. Everyone either heading back listening to us or back watching and reacting. One of the people that we had a chance to visit with while we were in Indianapolis joins us now, John Talty, the senior sports editor of AL Alabama.com, certainly a long chronicler in his short life of Alabama and Georgia football. And, John, good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Paul, it was great seeing you yesterday and excited to talk to you again today.
Well, I want to talk to you because it was, I think you revealed it today publicly. Your close friends have known about it, that you are in the final stages of a book dealing with Nick Saban, the leadership secrets of Nick Saban, how Alabama's coach became the greatest ever. I know you were waiting for the outcome last night. So just before we get to Georgia and what all that means, let's talk about the Saban angle and how you process what happened in relation to your book.
Yeah, well, and I think that they tied together, Paul, because Kirby Smart had talked about it in the lead up to this game, that when he first got to Georgia, he basically took everything that he saw that worked well at Alabama and told his people, let's do this. I mean, they took the practice schedule. They took, you know, the recruiting operations. I mean, even from how he handled the media, basically said, let's do it exactly the way that Nick does it at Alabama. So I think in many ways, you know, the way that Georgia won, I think speaks to, you know, the success that comes from Nick Saban's, you know, strategy and process and all those things that we've talked about over the years. But I think what Kirby said today, I think was interesting, and I agree with this, that this was one of Nick Saban's best coaching leadership seasons yet. You could tell this was not the most talented Alabama team. You could tell early in the season, you know, he was frustrated at times, baffled in some ways, trying to figure out how do I press the right buttons with this team. And I think he really adjusted well over the course of the season, realized this team needed something different. It was a young, inexperienced team. He didn't have the veterans the way he did a year ago that he could count on. He had to do things differently. And I think the fact that this team was able to make it to the national championship game and be as close as they were to winning, you know, having a lead in the fourth quarter really speaks a lot to the job Saban did this year. Of course, fans are going to be disappointed that it was a loss. But, I mean, this was a team that easily could have lost multiple games over the course of the season. Things went a little bit differently. And so I think it was a really impressive year that he was able to get this team with the flaws and shortcomings that it had all the way to that national championship game against Georgia.
John, when I saw you yesterday morning, we were sharing information that we had both independently been asked about Nick Saban's future. And that's a parlor game, and it never ends. And I think some of it comes with, you know, his success. Some of it comes with his age. But as you study him and interview people, as you have for the last year or two, and observe him, what is your view of how much longer he has to be the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the biggest question that's going to, you know, loom over the state of Alabama for as ever long as Nick ends up coaching. You know, I've talked to people, you know, former players, former coaches, you know, some who have told me, like, he's going to try to coach until he's 100. Now, I don't believe that, but I think that if you look at him, you know, healthy guy, still able to produce and work at a really high level. And he's talked about plenty over the years that, I mean, this is all he really knows. I mean, he's been around football since he was a boy. He loves being around the team. And I think he's one of those people that I believe knows his own strengths, knows his limitations. I don't see him as someone who would want to hang around too long and potentially tarnish his legacy with some bad seasons. The way we've seen with some other really successful coaches over the years who you can tell they just stayed a couple years too long. I mean, if you look at his recruiting, he's still doing that at a really high level. They just made it to a national championship game, albeit they lost. You look ahead to 2022, they're going to be one of the favorites, if not the favorite. They returned Bryce Young. They returned Will Anderson. I mean, I think as long as he's able to continue to do it at a high level, which he's shown he continues to do at the age of 70, I think he's going to want to keep going as long as he can. You know, now, when does he eventually hang up? I mean, again, I think we'll chronicle that a lot over the coming years. But I think as long as, again, he's able to do things at a high level, I think he's going to want to stay as long as he can.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone could argue his age got in the way yesterday. His team got in the way at times. But, yeah, I think it was so interesting because we all agreed that Georgia had the better team. But there was that Nick Saban factor. And I don't know too many people in our industry, John, who didn't, probably not even believing it, say, yeah, you can't go against Nick Saban. Do you think last night changes that at all?
I don't, because, again, I think people who watch this Alabama team closely this season know that, like, this was not one of his best teams. I think you and I talked about this yesterday. I think if Alabama had won this national championship, it would have been the most improbable national championship of Nick Saban's time in Tuscaloosa. I mean, the man's won 7 total national championships. If he had gotten 8 last night, I think it would have been the most unlikely, just because, again, this team had shortcomings all season long, very young, inexperienced. And I think you saw that last night when Jameson Williams went down. I mean, they had to rely on guys who are probably going to be very good in the future, guys who are freshmen, sophomore right now, haven't gotten a lot of reps, things like that. And so I think that there are a lot of things kind of going against him. But like you said, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why to pick Georgia in that game, and ultimately proved accurate given the way they won. But, I mean, the X factors were they had the best quarterback in Bryce Young, and then they had Saban. And Saban has shown so many times that he'll find a way to win that it's pretty much the safe thing to do is pick Saban. You know, I think I picked against Alabama in the SEC Championship game, and I told myself I'm not doing that again this year. Picked Alabama, and, you know, Georgia won. But there's a healthy respect for what Saban does and what he's able to do, even with teams that are not, you know, again, the upper echelon in terms of talent compared to some of the previous teams he's had.
But, John, I bet if we'd given you a lie detector test, and that would be a good idea, by the way, you probably weren't really sure you believed that, but you almost have to. So let me ask you about the other side, and that's Kirby Smart. Many believe he's the closest to Saban. Jimbo Fisher, acolytes could argue. But what do you see with him at 46? And is this the beginning of a dynasty? I mean, it's not really the beginning. It's already started. It's just this is simply the first championship.
Yeah, and I think I do agree that I think Kirby's the closest to Nick in terms of personality, relentless pursuit of success. I mean, I think there's a ruthlessness to Kirby, and I mean that in a positive way. Like he's going to do what he can to win. It's a very challenging system, very challenging to win national championship, especially the way that Saban's built things in Alabama. And I always felt like Kirby seemed to understand the best what you have to do, what it takes every single day to actually make it to the mountaintop. And so now is the thing that I think what is in part has separated Saban so much from all the other successful coaches we've seen over the course of college football history is that Saban has found a way to sustain it. You know, complacency is a thing that he's always trying to fight against, and that's now going to be Kirby's battle. You know, it's a 41-year drought. Took a lot of emotion and feelings and everything to finally get to last night and win it all. Now the challenge is how do you get back there? And that's, I think, in many ways, is harder than even getting to the top in the very beginning, because you've got guys who are like, we've done it before. Why can't we do it again? And it's going to take maybe even more effort, even more work to try to hold on to something that's going to be very hard to hold on to, given that we know Alabama's not going away. We know programs like Ohio State, Clemson, others are going to be around. I mean, it's going to be challenging. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how Kirby is able to combat against complacency and other issues that could potentially set in now that they've finally won it all.
John, the other story of yesterday was the inability of the CFP to get anything done. And I know you've covered that. And I just revealed the championship game ratings. They were better than last year. But last year is an outlier because of COVID. But if you take out the last year's championship game, the number is still very low compared to where the concept was of taking the Monday night game. Can you describe what you learned yesterday and over the weekend from those who run college football, and how big of an obstacle is this alliance simply resistance to expanding the playoff?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of frustration coming out of that meeting yesterday. You certainly saw it with Bob Bowlesby, visibly frustrated. I thought Greg Sankey had some pretty pointed and strong comments coming out of that meeting. And so I think the issue that I think Sankey hit on yesterday that seems to be an ongoing issue is that, you know, there's some of these conferences and their leaders, which in theory would benefit the most from playoff expansion, that are kind of getting into these little sticking points where they refuse to budge, refuse to give in. And that's why you saw Sankey yesterday say, listen, we've dominated the system more than anybody, and we're still willing to, you know, come to the table and try to make a compromise here. And here are some of these other conferences that have not done that, and they're kind of holding the line and not budging on this thing. I mean, it's a frustrating situation, I think, for everybody involved. And ultimately, it's going to have to take some people coming to the compromise, coming to the middle of the table and being willing to, you know, give up on some things that they feel like they need. I think, you know, it seems like the ACC is maybe one of the big problems right now, and the Big Ten, and how they've held their ground. And so either they'll find a way to make a compromise, or something that seems to make a lot of sense for a lot of people, lots of potential added money in the mix, more access for more teams. You know, if they don't find a way to give in on some things and come to an agreement, you know, they'll just kick it, the can down the road, and we'll have to wait until the contract runs up in 2026 for expansion.
I don't know, John. It just seems shameful that smart people, good people, are this obstinate about something that seems so obvious. And when Sankey was with us yesterday, I mean, I don't know if he was joking or not. He said, we don't have to do anything. We can get to the 13, the year after the contract runs out, and why do we have to change anything? And I think he may have been serious. I mean, what good does the SEC get out of a 12 school playoff?
Right. I think the SEC's point from the very beginning has been, we don't want to do anything that's going to allow less access for our schools to possibly make it, which is why, an 18 playoff with six automatic qualifiers is just never going to make a lot of sense for the SEC. So I think ultimately, regardless as to who wants to admit it or not, if you go back to it, there was a lot of momentum behind this. And once the SEC added Texas and Oklahoma, you saw people kind of put their feet in the ground. You saw some pettiness pop up. And I think that's a lot of what's happened here is that people don't want to do anything that they feel like is rewarding the SEC. So they're trying to hold their ground, again, despite the fact that it would probably benefit them a lot, even more so than the SEC. So it's going to, like I said, it's going to take some of these people to have to compromise, find a way to find a common solution. Otherwise, we're just going to be stuck in this. I thought Bob Bowlesby put it great yesterday, that it just feels like Groundhog Day. It feels like the same thing over and over again. We talked about deadlines and meetings, and nothing really happens. And so, eventually they're either going to have to push through that, or we'll just keep on living Groundhog Day.
John Talty, his book out on Saban, about 6 months away. It seems like the publishing date is right in the middle of SEC Media Days, unless I misread that, John.
It seems like it might be timed around that. It could be an interesting time.
The book is The Leadership Secrets of Nick Saban, and it's still 6 months ago away, but you can bet we'll be talking more to John over the next few months. So, John, many thanks. Great to see you, and fantastic job in covering the CFP.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
The one and only John Talty. Nobody better for the ins and the outs of the CFP and the vagaries of Alabama and Georgia football. We are heading to the break. We still haven't talked to Mike Griffith. We don't know if he's still around. He may be on an all-night bender after Georgia's first national championship in 41 years. I feel like we've all been on an all-night bender. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Lee is in Seattle. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Lee. I'm sorry, Paul. Long time no talk to.
Thank you.
Great show. It's so much fun to watch ever since today. Can I get co-management or co-agent on Elle's contract with you? Because she was fantastic today. She was great.
Thank you.
Also, I missed the part yesterday on your show when they were talking about that Georgia gave up some field time to do some mind work or brain work or something.
Yeah. That was Molly McGrath. And most coaches, pro and college, use sports psychologists. I think we may have overreacted a little bit, but because of the situation that Georgia had been in, it just seemed a little more dire. But Nick Saban does that too. It's just a matter of these coaches always have sports psychologists come in at some point to try to mentally prepare the players.
Okay. I didn't know if it was that general or specific to the quarterback. I missed the first part of that. That's why I asked.
Yeah, no, it was very interesting, though, that there was such a mind game going on. I think some of it may have been a ruse. Thanks, Lee. Good to have you back on the program. Greg is in Florence, Alabama. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Paul. I really just wanted to call in and to congratulate Georgia on the win and actually thank Alabama and Georgia for a great season of football. They've both done an outstanding job. And I also wanted to say that it takes – a great team, it has to go through a lot of adversity to get to where both those teams got to.
No, you're right. Hey, I hate to run. We are unfortunately out of time. A couple more hours to go.